Nathan, my friend, it's great to see you on this episode of TFL Talking Trucks.
It's good to be back, amigo.
Awesome. Yeah, we haven't done a couple of shows together recently, but this episode I want to dedicate all the way to big family haulers. I'm talking about big truck-based SUVs, specifically the new Tahoe and the Suburban.
There's been some changes. I hear that a bunch of things have remained the same, but that there's been some changes along the way. And especially with the interiors, that's like a big change. That's what I
Yeah,
hear.
and it's also like the whole landscape is changing a bit, right? Because every new SUV is being redesigned. And we're talking about, once again, this is TFL Talking Trucks, right? We're talking
Right.
about truck-based, body-on-frame, Tahoes, Ford Expeditions, and on and on and on. And there's a lot of changes across the board. So there's a new Expedition coming soon. There's a new Armada coming soon. A new Yukon coming soon. And more.
Yeah, and then look at what's going on already with the landscape. You have this new Toyota Sequoia that came out not that long ago, which changed the game a little bit. So you have all of these vehicles either that have been here for a while or are being either slightly revamped or completely redone. And big SUVs are still extremely popular.
Yeah, these are kind of our trucksters, right? I mean, but they are getting expensive. So there's a couple of themes here, right? There's one theme, which is they're updated and new. There's some new changes, new technologies, but also prices are going up in a big way. So we have a lot of this data to go over. But also, dude, I really missed you in Texas. I was just recently in Texas at the state fair. And I was there partially because of the Chevy Tahoe and the Suburban.
Yeah, Texas State Fair is our bread and butter, right? Every year, or every year we can go, we do go. And it usually has a couple of great reveals, and we have great access to certain trucks. This is one of those events that I think a lot of people find to be in the heartland of the United States, really deep in the weeds with proper truck culture. So the fact that you were able to go, and the fact that I believe you were able to have some fun, which is
Yeah.
really ticking me off because you had some fun without me. I think everybody wants to hear about that as well.
Yeah, dude. So actually, Zach, our producer Zach and I went, and we actually did a couple of things. First of all, there was a Ram RHO experience there at the State Fair of Texas, and basically, the Ram RHO is not quite on sale yet, right? It's just being shipped out, maybe as we speak, right, from the factories. And no customers, as far as I know, have them yet, and no journalist has driven one yet. But they had basically Ram drivers, Ram truck people, taking people on rides, and these RHOs were jumping these little moguls and little hills and actually catching a lot of air.
All right. Well, I mean, that's what they're built for. W are you telling me that you got a chance to sit in one and jump it?
Yeah, I was in the passenger seat. So,
Yeah, but you still got to be a lean. All right.
that's
See,
not
I knew I
kind
was going to be mad about this.
well, it's not really what we do, right? We love driving, right?
I know, but you still had a chance to experience it. And I think a lot of people are jonesing to find out what the thing is like, and you got a taste of it.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your vehicle. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your vehicle, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your vehicle hassle-free and fast, go to tfltruck.com and click Sell Your Truck in the navigation menu. Or Click on the High Road ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. High Road makes it easy, and we like easy.
Yeah, and also there was some blaring music because it was almost like a Disney ride, right? Disneyland ride where there's like a big line where it's kind of snaked around, and then there's some music playing in line, and then you can, you know, sign the paperwork saying, you know, it's okay, you know, I'm not going to sue anybody. And then you jump in the truck and the professional driver kind of takes you around the course, which is only about, I don't know, 70 seconds, maybe 60 seconds of driving. So it's kind of a two small loops. But you get a taste of it, but I didn't get a taste for the sound of the truck. You know, I didn't experience the sound of it because there was some blaring music, you know, in the background. But I got to tell you, dude, they made that truck lighter because, you know, the Hellcat is gone, unfortunately. The big supercharged V8. But the thing about the supercharged V8, and I actually had an opportunity a couple of years back to actually lift the supercharger, you know, because, you know, one was bolted off the engine. I was at the dealership and I was doing some videos there and I was able to lift one, and it's really heavy. I mean, the supercharger itself is super, I want to say it's like 80 pounds, if not more.
Do you know it takes about like 70 horsepower just to turn the supercharger? So there's a lot of loss that comes along with having a massive V8.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And a really heavy supercharger in a truck, in any form of vehicle, when it comes to performance. So in theory, if you're able to cut that weight out, I'm going to talk, and get rid of that resistance, in theory, you should have a much lighter, quicker truck. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, totally. And a little bit more balance, right? So what's happening now, right? So that V8 is gone. And of course, I think all of us are sad. I mean, I'm a little bit sad because there was a character that comes with that engine, right?
That TRX had so much character.
Yeah, and actually, I miss it a lot. You know, the TRX that TFL Studios had for a couple of years, we sold it, of course, to make room for other newer vehicles, right? But I wish to have it back, right? I really miss it.
Right. I think that was one of our longest long-term test vehicles because we had that for, 2 years?
Almost 2 years.
Normally, I think our maximum has been like 18 months.
Yeah. So normally, even some trucks, we have like less than a year, right?
Some are 6 months, yeah.
Yeah. So this one was one of the longer ones that we've had in our fleet. And it's just kind of, when you start it, it just growls to life, you know, comes in and has a very unique sound, even different from the Raptor R. You know, the Raptor R has a slightly different sound. So, of course, we miss it. But what happened with the RHO, now they have a high output straight six twin turbo, right? But at least what Ram is telling us is that because they were able to remove some weight from the front of the truck, it's a little bit more balanced, right? And that's important if you do eventually want a little jump, you know, make a jump in your truck. You don't want it to nosedive, right? And just go straight off a cliff.
Yeah, I believe some people in the industry would call that endos, when they slam their nose into the ground. Yeah, I mean, that's true. And I do recall that the overall driving character of the TRX, as much fun as it was really nose heavy, and it kind of sat on its haunches in the front, especially when you were going over undulations, not necessarily jumps, but you could really feel it hitting its bump stops when it was really being pushed. So I've been told that the RHO eliminates a lot of that. And by doing so, it's more maneuverable, it's easier to drive, easier to live with, more efficient, and it has a lot of power. And so on its toes off-road, it can easily keep up with a TRX. This is what I've been told.
Yeah, we'll have to test it, right? Obviously.
Yes.
Yeah, we have to test it. But I got to tell you, you know, the 70 seconds I spent in one with a professional driver, you know, driving, not me driving, is that, you know, when you do come off this little berm and you're in the air for maybe a split second, maybe a second, and you're kind of like hunkering down, you're preparing for the hit, but the hit never comes. And that's, of course, the testament to the suspension and actually, you know, having the travel, you know, it's about 13 inches to 14 inches of travel, having that travel and actually having those Bilstein shocks and the springs, you know, just really nicely cushioning the landing. And yeah, I cannot wait to drive one.
I bet you a lot of people are asking out there, well, they said that they might bring the TRX name back, right? Remember that they kind of left that out there kind of hanging?
Yes.
And is there any indication that they're thinking about doing something with the old TRX name?
Well, dude, that's hard to say because the CEO who said this, who said the TRX name is on the shelf and that name will come back eventually, it's not thrown away, he left.
Right, I know. He's like, I'm going to make an announcement, and I'm leaving. So good luck, guys. Try to keep up with my announcements. Yeah, that was Tim Kaniskis?
Yeah, Tim Kaniskis made that announcement, and then he left, and I'm not sure actually where he landed. But
he's at Faraday Future.
Oh, really?
No, I'm totally kidding.
You scared me. Oh no.
Sorry, folks. I couldn't help it. It's been a while. I miss my friend Andre. I have to mess with him a little.
Yeah, thank
All
you.
All right. So Texas State Fair sounds like it was a success because at least you got a taste for the RHO.
Yeah.
Am I correct?
Yeah. And I also got a taste for a lot of food, deep fried food, because our producer, Zach, right? This was his first time at the State Fair of Texas.
Oh, good Lord. Okay.
Right. And so as a host, I felt like I was a host because I've been there several years. In the past, I decided, you know, to show them around, and Chevrolet was kind of hosting us, right? Because it was part of the Tahoe and Suburban event that they were having there. But we kind of stepped aside and we walked around and we walked into this one building and it's all fried foods. You know, it's like booths as far as the eye can see, and everybody's kind of competing with each other on fried food. So I made Zach eat a deep fried Snickers bar on a stick.
Oh, did you get that on video or get some pictures?
No, but I also had one. So not only was I making him eat it, I actually also had one.
What was it?
You know what? I wouldn't say I'm going to run out and get another one, but but it wasn't like awful. So it was somewhere in the middle. Like it was interesting to eat, and but it did not agree with Zach. So Zach had a very tough time post the Snickers
bar. Did you poison our producer, Andre?
No, he's still alive. He's fine.
I didn't see. I when I was at the State Fair, one of my first times, I had it was a chocolate dipped deep fried bacon.
Ah,
it yes. Tasted really good at first, the sweet and salty, and then I got a little bit ill, I think, and maybe because of the beer I was drinking. I'm not sure about that one, but that's a whole different story. So, okay, so you poisoned Zach.
No.
You got to ride shotgun in an RHO.
Yes.
And then you got a chance to check out the new Tahoe and Suburban.
Yes, right? But before I did that, I ate a chocolate-covered strawberry on a stick that was deep fried with powdered sugar on top of it. So I also had that.
That sounds like it might be a lot better, actually.
Actually, it was better than a deep-fried Snickers bar because the strawberry itself is fresh, right? So you're getting like the chocolate, you're getting the batter, but also you get hit with the strawberry at the same time. So I would recommend that actually over the Snickers bar.
A slight side note, but about the fair, I've been to a lot of state fairs throughout the nation, of various events, and I gotta say, I think that the Texas State Fair is one of the best state fairs, not just because of the cars, but just in general, the mood, the music, the overall feel of it. It's a really old one too. It goes back years. I keep coming back to that when I think of the Model American State Fair, something that people should come from other states to see. And I truly believe that it is one of the best ones out there.
Well, everything is bigger in Texas, and
Exactly.
I truly believe that. I love being there. It's one of the largest fairs. It also goes about 3.5 weeks.
Yeah, I know.
When you think about a state fair, it's usually like a weekend, right? It just kind of like comes and goes and kind of flashes and disappears. This is a serious production. There's parades, there's concerts, there's fireworks, and it's still going on right now. So when you're hearing this episode of TFL Talking Trucks, and if you're near Dallas or Fort Worth area, it's still there. I mean, it's still going, going strong. And that's where it's truck country also, right?
It really is, yeah.
Well, now, sorry, we talked too much about the state fair.
I know, I know. It's just.
But I love it. Anyways, so let's switch gears, like you said, to the Tahoe and Suburban. So this is a big deal. The GM SUVs are dominant, right? They are dominant in their segment, and they have been for decades, at least maybe 2 decades, if not more. Or at least maybe 15 years. But recently, I did a sales report on tfltruck.com, and the whole segment is shrinking. So we're talking about the GM Tahoe and GMC Yukons, and also the Cadillac Escalades, also the Ford and Lincolns, the Jeeps, the Wagoneers, right? Toyota, Lexus, you mentioned those, Nissan and Infiniti. The entire segment shrunk by 12.4% last quarter, which is a significant decline in sales. But I can explain it maybe in twofold, right?
Okay.
This is my kind of educated guess. It's that people are waiting for new products, right? That's part of it, because everybody saw the new Tahoe, what, 11 months ago it came out, actually.
Right.
It was shown a long time ago, and Roman and Tommy went out to California to kind of show those vehicles to us. And of course, the new Armada is coming, not quite here yet. The new Ford is coming, not quite here yet. So I think a lot of people maybe are waiting. They're unsure. They're unsure about what's coming and what's not coming. So I think that's part of it. And also prices are going up. They're getting a lot more expensive.
I think that that might be one of the stinging points. I think across the board, prices have gone up, especially over the old version versus the new version. And that's including everything, from Toyota on up to Nissan. I know that that's the case with General Motors. And if I'm correct, there's something to be said about the packages that everybody's getting and how expensive those are, because there's still entry-level versions of every single truck you mentioned. And obviously they're the least expensive option of each and every one. And then once you start adding packages to these things, those packages are becoming more expensive as well. And I've been noticing that. And that in itself is really turning off a lot of buyers as such between those two things. And I think you're right about that. It's definitely hurting the market. So hopefully this market will grow once these other trucks hit the market and people become interested again. But I do think that some automakers are starting to price themselves out of the game.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm always surprised, right? When I go to some of the local dealerships, just casually kind of looking at what's happening there and what's going on, usually the Yukon Denalis are sold out, right?
Yeah.
Usually, the higher priced vehicles are not there. Either the supply, either there's something wrong with how many they're building, or people are just buying them left and right. And that's kind of, a lot of the comments on our podcasts and videos that we get is things are out of reach. They're too expensive. But when you actually go to some of the dealerships, at least in the Denver area here around me where I am, I see a lot of expensive vehicles selling first. and some of the cheaper ones are kind of being left over and sitting on lots.
There's something to be said about fleet sales as well, which is something that General Motors has been dominating with the Suburban and the Tahoe, I believe. In addition, though, to all that, and you're correct, I would say that the other component to that is that people are beginning to look at modern tech. So when they see something that has old tech in it, I think that they might be slowing down on what they're purchasing. A really good example is, even though the Sequoia currently is down, if you look at where the Sequoia was when it was replaced with the new model, sales started moving upward, I believe, in a significant way. And part of the reason why was, this is a new Toyota. It's a hybrid. It's got new tech. Yes, we all agree that there's great things about it and not so great things about it. But nonetheless, I think that people really latched on to some of that new tech. I have a feeling that they'll do the same thing with the Armada. That twin turbocharged V6 is going to definitely be popular. I mean, it's a monster. And I believe that we may see that as a bit of a rebound as well, because you're getting that new tech again. But General Motors didn't really go new tech, did they?
No. They're keeping their powertrains almost identical to what it was. So the 5.3 is mostly unchanged, 5.3 V8. The 6.2 liter V8 is also mostly unchanged. They have to tweak them tiny bits because of emissions, right? Because every single year, it seems, the emissions, the EPA regulations and the government regulations are a little bit tougher every single year. Manufacturers have to adjust a little bit. But what they are doing is maintaining the power levels. I talked to Ford. They said the same thing. You know, their twin turbo V6 still has between 400 and 440 horsepower, but it was a little bit tougher to achieve, right? You know, they still have the same power levels, but because of emissions, they had to change a couple things, maybe tuning, maybe some calibrations. I'm not sure about hardware, if they had to change hardware, but they have to do something to make it a little bit cleaner.
So I guess we've moved on to the Chevrolet siblings. Should we talk about them now?
Yeah. So, like you said, so the chassis of the new Tahoe and Suburban largely unchanged. They're the same size. Well, thank goodness, because they're huge. You know, they're huge already. And then one of my favorite ones that I saw there was a base model LS. It's called LS. Suburban 2025 with 9 seats, dude.
I did a video on that one, which I watched.
And yeah, was, I wish you were there, because I think you both appreciate that. Especially, I think that would be a perfect SUV for the state fair, right? Because I don't think you could put 9 people there and go cross country. You know, it'll be not super comfortable because there's somebody sitting right next to you, you know, while you're driving. Because it has basically a 40-20-40 split front bench seat, right? But getting all your family and friends into one vehicle and going to the fair, or maybe going to the July 4th celebration or something, dinner, you know, going across town, I think that's where these SUVs are really, really great.
I agree with you. And there's a lot of things about that. I saw that video. It was a great video. Zach shot it with you. Apparently, he wasn't heaving, at least on camera at that time, which is great. But what I find interesting is, yes, you're absolutely right. You can put in 9 people. And that's something that you can't do in very many SUVs nowadays, right? In addition, because it's the Suburban, you have a lot of storage space behind that third row. I mean, a lot. So you can put in a ton of stuff there. And I noticed, I glanced at some of the comments, and there were certain people who had certain things to say about other vehicles in that class, even though they're smaller. And one of the reasons why General Motors is able to make the most out of that much space partly has to do with their packaging and their independent rear suspension. They no longer have to have that lump where the solid axle goes through in the back, right? The way it's designed, they have a nice independent rear suspension setup, which they've had for a few years. And between that and decent packaging, they're able to put not only a ton of people in there, but a ton of cargo as well.
Yeah, they're able to lower the rear floor area, basically. And it helps me too, because I'm a little bit taller, you know, than most. And sitting in the third row, sometimes, you know, my knees are in my chest, right? My head is touching the ceiling. But in the Suburban and the Tahoe, they're able to move the floor down, you know, position the seat where my knees are not in my chest, and my head is actually not completely hitting the ceiling. So that's good. But there's a couple of bad things that come from it.
Okay.
So first of all, and we didn't get a chance to show that in this particular video for 2025, because we were not off-road, right? We were on pavement, you know, usually in the parking lot.
The base model doesn't have a locker per se. It's essentially it is four-wheel drive. You don't have a low gear transfer case.
Right. You don't have low range. That's one thing. But I'm not bothered by that. I'm not bothered by the fact that the base models have four high but not four low. I think that's okay. The ground clearance on the rear suspension is an issue, right? Because you have these control arms, you know, the air arms that are coming down, and there are shocks mounted in them, but they're sticking down, right? So that they're low. And some of the other Suburbans and Tahoes have air suspensions. So you can kind of like, you know, push the wheels down a little bit and lift, you know, effectively lifting the arms a little bit higher. So you have a little bit of clearance. But I know these are not rock crawlers per se. They're too big, and often they're very heavy. But people joke around and they say, you know, can you run over a pebble? Right? Can you actually go over any pebbles with this truck? And that could be an issue if you're living, you know, on a dirt road, or maybe your driveway is very long, or maybe your driveway is very steep. So it could be an issue for some people.
I would imagine that some of that could be solved with slightly different tires, perhaps with a different wheel setup, maybe even. In addition to, it depends on whether or not they have that suspension system. And there's always a possibility that General Motors may bring out a ZR2 version of it, or, you know, some sort of special off-road. Not that they've ever really done that with the Suburban. They've done it with the Tahoe. We know that. But it would be interesting to see if they were willing to go that step. But I will say this. I've seen Suburbans, even newer ones, in all types of environments. And usually they're trains. They just go through almost anything. They tend to be that overall size, the length and the weight seems to be some sort of sweet spot. So they get through some really terrible off-road terrain, despite not really being set up for it. I've seen that before in with fairly recent ones.
Yeah.
It's not, okay, the rear overhang is quite a bit, but you have rear overhang issues with pickup trucks as well. So I would say that it's not that big of a deal. That independent suspension with that long rear overhang, I can see it as hanging up on stuff. But if you're going to go bashing over boulders, then you should not be bringing a Suburban anyway.
Exactly. And Suburban has a long wheelbase. I mean,
really long wheelbase.
It really hurts that for the Suburban as far as off-road performance. But you and I remember this video like clearly, like it happened yesterday, where the Silverado versus Yukon 84, I believe. We were trying to compare, you know, the pickup truck. I believe it was a Trail Boss, you know, kind of an off-roady pickup truck versus an off-roady SUV in the same family, right? And they behave differently, but both of them climbed our Tombstone Hill. Both of them climbed it without a lot of issues. So
that was that a ZR2?
I think it was a Trail Boss. I don't think it was a full-on ZR2 pickup truck. But I may be wrong, but I remember the SUV, I believe it was a Yukon. First of all, Yukon 84 and also the Z71 Tahoe, they have the fancy rear differential, right?
That's so, right. It's not the G80.
Right. It's kind of like it uses clutches basically. So it does have a locking mechanism there. So you do have that traction. The SUV is a little bit heavier in the back, right? Because you have the seats, you have the full body. The truck,
glass too.
Yeah, glass. The pickup truck just has a bed in the back. And if you're not loaded, there's not a lot of weight back there, comparatively speaking. So the traction, the way they deliver traction, is a little bit different.
I
But both
agree.
of them are very capable when we
I
test.
agree with that as well. Really, those types of trucks, and I would probably wager the Suburban, even that LS that you were driving, they would perform better in general with better tires. We've proven that time and time again that if you have a decent set of off-road tires, off-roading is simply better. So, ground clearance issues aside, and we can easily upend almost any vehicle that we get our hands on, considering the obstacles we have available to us in Colorado. The Suburban has the capability to be far more off-roady if General Motors wanted it to be. It's really a question of whether or not the consumers are willing to pay the extra to have a more off-roady version of the Suburban, and if there's enough people out there to actually demand it. If that's the case, then I'm sure they would build it.
Yeah. So, for example, the Ford Expedition used to have a Timberline Expedition, right?
Right.
And now they're renaming it and kind of shifting it a little bit to the Tremor. So now the Expedition Tremor, it just takes a lot of the kind of the goodness from the truck side, pickup truck side, and kind of moves it into the SUV side. And of course, GM's answer has been it's the Z71. But like you said, it's not a ZR2, right?
Right.
There's a quite a bit of difference there. The ZR2 may have, more advanced dampers and, the shocks with DSSVs. It has maybe more clearance, more articulation. But at least on the Z71, they had one. I was showing the red one, and they have a unique bumper, right? So on the Z71 Tahoes and Suburbans, the front bumper is different. And it has more approach angle, you could see that. And then that's really good. And they have really beefy toe points, the toe hooks in the front. So it does have, quite a bit of clearance in the front of the vehicle as well.
I would imagine that its direct competitor is still the Ford Expedition, right? I mean, I would imagine that's still the case. And now that it's been redone, I'm curious to what your take is between the two of them, because there's a big power disparity between the two of them, at least with the entry-level powertrain. And Ford's updates, it's kind of a hot and cold, or hit or miss, if you want to call it that, in terms of what some people think about it. It's very new on the outside. It looks like a very different vehicle. They're definitely making it look more like a truck than it was before, I would say. It's even more manly. But what's your take on it?
Yeah, so a few numbers, right? I'm looking down at my cheat sheet here on the side. So you asked about Ford and Lincoln, right? So GM, like we said, still controls the segment. In Q3 of 2024, the entire segment sold 104,000 vehicles approximately. GM sold 60,000. So it's about 60% of the market currently is GM. Ford is number two. Ford has sold about 20,000 Expeditions and Navigators in the same time. So about 20% of the market is theirs. Number three is Jeep, Wagoneer, and Grand Wagoneer. So that's pretty impressive, right? It's kind of a new kid on the block, right? The Wagoneer is only what, a couple years old. So it's able to kind of, lock out that third spot, at least in the truck-based SUV world here. For big SUVs. Fourth place is Toyota and Lexus, climbing. Well, they sold about 8,000. Jeep sold about 10,000. And then in the fifth place is Nissan and Infiniti, and also has a possibility. So the last three places, there's not a lot of space between them, right? So it's really between Jeep, Toyota, and Nissan, and Ford and GM are kind of at the top. The Ford Expedition update, I think, at least visually different, right? When you put the new Expedition next to the current one, there is no mistaking them. The styling is different, the lights are different, the bumpers, the grills, the rear end is different. The new Expedition now has the clamshell, right? So the top opens up and it has a little tailgate.
Which is one of the few things I like about it, too, by the way.
Dude, that's amazing. I mean, Land Cruisers used to have that. Rolls-Royce Cullinan has a tailgate. I mean, very expensive SUVs, Range Rovers, right? Range Rovers have a little tailgates like this. So I think that's a really cool feature. So things don't roll out when you open the, you know, the hatch and all of your, I don't know, what do wealthy people do? Croquet?
That's Roman. Roman has hair products, and so the bottles, you don't want them to roll out. So by having that tailgate come down, it actually prevents them from flying out.
I was going to say croquet, maybe croquet sets or your croquet balls. You know, you don't want them.
You know, caviar. You don't want your jars of caviar to roll out.
Grape Poupon.
That too. Yeah.
Mustard.
But considering all the things Ford could have done, that one thing is cool. But there are some people out there who think that the Ford didn't go far enough. But I think that might be a discussion for another time. I kind of wanted to go back to what General Motors has just done with these. And Andre, I watched the video and I looked for a while. I mean, granted, the truck was black, which is never good for video. But I still was like, I can't really see that much of a difference.
No,
it doesn't look that different to me.
Yeah, so they changed the headlamps a little bit and the grill. The rear lamps, I mean, if you're kind of a freak like us, right, we know details. But if you're a casual observer in the rear of the new Suburban in Tahoe, you will not notice the light change. But unless you're an enthusiast, right? In the front, you might notice the front headlamp being different, but you may not, you know, if you're not an enthusiast. So I think... But sometimes this happens when you're a leader, right? When you're very successful at selling something, sometimes you don't want to change it too much, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's one thing. But there's another big problem here. Maybe I didn't hit that point too heavily yet in my video, but the towing capacities on the Tahoe and the Suburban are one of the lower ones in the class now. So... Let me give you an example. So
the base
Tahoe two-wheel drive with a V8 has a tow rating of 8,400 pounds, okay? The new Armada has a tow rating of 8,500 pounds, okay, almost the same. But here's the big but. The base Expedition, the 2025 version, with a maximum towing package, by the way, I'm talking about maximum towing packages for all of these, has a rating of 9,600 pounds. This is 1,200 pounds more than the Tahoe. So the new Wagoneer can tow up to 10,000 pounds. That's the rating on the Wagoneers. And I think, I don't know, I think this may hurt GM because a lot of my friends, for example, my friend John, who's looking to buy a Tahoe soon, maybe next year, this new one, he has a large boat that he needs to tow, right? And his boat, I think it's over 8,000 pounds. So... And the whole idea is I'm buying a big truck-based SUV. I can put my family in it and I can bring my toys, right, with me. But if his boat is too heavy, what is he going to do? You know, he's not going to be able to buy a Tahoe.
So do you think that General Motors has deliberately put themselves out of the game, or are they bringing out other vehicles in the future, other versions of the Suburban and Tahoe that will be a little bit more tow-friendly?
I don't know this because there's no hints of a heavy-duty Suburban, right? I think a lot of commenters brought it up as well. I saw some comments about heavy-duty versions, you know, 2500 version of the Suburban that existed in the past, right? And currently, for example, GM Defense has government contracts where they're building... they're not calling them Suburbans. They're calling them kind of heavy SUVs, but these are like armored, heavy duty chassis, and they're big Suburbans, right? But there's no word that that's going to come to consumers, you know, to us. So, and here's another example. A new Suburban with a new 3-liter Duramax diesel, which is going to be available in the first quarter of 2025, which is lovely. You know, a lot of people are excited about the new Duramax because it's the latest generation of the engine. The new Suburban with the Duramax 4x4 has a tow rating of 7,800 pounds. 7,800 pounds. You know what has similar towing? My Colorado. My Chevy Colorado can tow 7,700 pounds, almost the same as a Suburban. So that's puzzling. I think that's kind of puzzling.
It's got to be the weight. It's got to be the weight that powertrain is heavier than your average smaller V8, at least as far as I know. But I mean, dude, that's dreadful, especially because it has tons of tools, like 420 foot-pounds of torque, or is it 460?
Well, I mean, it's 460 is on the V8, the big
right.
V8 has 460. The new Duramax has 495.
So all that torque.
Yes.
Diesels are known for towing. They have the right disposition for towing, and you just cut yourself off at the legs by not. Wow. Okay.
So
I don't understand. I don't understand that one.
Okay.
To be honest
well,
with you,
maybe
it doesn't make sense.
Okay, the couple things could be going on here, and this is my perspective. This is not GM talking, right? My perspective is they changed their architecture. When was it? 2021, when the new generation came out, right? It's independent rear suspension, right? Like we just discussed,
which could be the issue.
It could be an issue, and they're kind of locked in, right? It's really hard to change your architecture, and you don't want to do that too often because it costs so much money, right? So they may be a little bit kind of pigeonholed in the current weight ratings, right? So we may see a bump when they redesign it, I would say in 2 or 3 years, right? When the next generation may come out, we may see a huge bump in those weight ratings. But I think they're kind of pigeonholed right now. You know, there's not a lot of things you can do. Yes, you might be able to bump your gross vehicle weight rating, but you have to recertify everything, right? Retest. Then what about cooling, right? That's a big thing for towing.
Right.
So that's a tough question. Or maybe their customers are not really asking for this, but that's not what I see. That's what I see is people have this vision that this is the ultimate SUV. It has to tow a lot and it has to carry a lot of people.
So on one side, it's passenger capacity and it's cargo capacity, really good. On the other side, their towing has let a lot of people down.
Well, that's my opinion, at least. So, yeah.
Your opinion, I mean, let's be honest here. Your opinion is based in fact. And the facts are that their towing numbers are abysmal, frankly, for what you're getting. Especially with the turbo diesel, but let's put that aside. That LS model, which is a plain Jane, pretty much stripped down. Really, its biggest option is the fact that it has an all-wheel drive, four-wheel drive system. Otherwise, not a whole lot of goodies on it. And that one its payload was enough for family.
It was
ish.
Yeah, it was like 1,700 pounds. So that's not bad. That's a pretty good payload.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong. 1,700 pounds, if you divide it by 9 people, that means that everybody's got to weigh around, average out at about 150 pounds-ish?
No, let's pull out the calculator. I think it's about 190. So let's see. So 1,700 pounds, divide by 9, carry the 1. It's about 190.
Okay.
And you and I are
my
not...
My mouth has always been off, but there's an important point here. 190 pounds. Okay.
Okay.
Let's say we took the TFL crew. And let's say I came into town.
Mm-hmm.
So you, me, Roman, Tommy, Alex, Case, Zach, Ian.
Grant.
And let's say Mr. Truck. That's
okay.
9.
Okay.
Okay, granted, Alex and Case are almost negative weight by that comparison.
Yes.
But the heaviest, that'd be me. I'm a 265. Mr. Truck is probably around, he's lost a lot of weight, so he's probably closer to about 220. And I'd say between you and Roman, my point I'm getting at is that the average American studios would be at that level. If we all went in there.
Yeah. Can you imagine 9 of us being in? You know what I can see? We usually have a holiday party or a holiday lunch, right?
I could see
all of us jumping in one Suburban and going to the holiday party.
And what if you wanted a tow on the way there, a horse trailer for Tommy's newest acquisition? You couldn't do it.
That could be an issue, my friend. But hopefully, yeah, it could be an issue.
But my point is that the weight rating of the vehicle might be okay for a family. And by the way, we're not talking about with any cargo in it. I mean, how often do families travel with cargo? Often. But it's a bit depressing to think about the fact that if you load that thing up all the way with your family, and let's say your family are, you know, fairly big heifers like me, and you've got gear and cargo, and then you want to go tow a camping trailer or something, you may not be able to really do that effectively.
Yeah. But on the flip side, there is no other vehicle with 9 seat belts. Okay.
Yeah. Agreed.
So GM, I mean, there is some good and some bad. So it'll be very interesting how this plays out. But
do they have that option available for the Tahoe? With a third, seat up front?
Yeah, I don't know this yet because there's no configurator online yet. So a lot of the little nuances, we still don't know. But I wanted to kind of close out our show on pricing, right?
Okay.
Because we talked a bunch about, you know, some of the features and tech. We didn't talk a lot about technology because, I mean, you can kind of watch some of our videos that we published.
Absolutely.
OldTFL.com. And
the screens do look good in there, though, by the way.
And you could see, you know, the screens are bigger, of course, and the technology is there. And General Motors, I would say right now, they're on top on their towing tech. They just kind of bested themselves with the 2025 Tahoe and Suburban. And I think everybody needs to watch this space because they have special recommendations for boat towing. They have special trailer maintenance sections where you can keep notes or keep information about your trailer so you can remember when to change your trailer tires or trailer, you know, kind of changing the bearings on your trailer. But price, let's talk price.
Yeah.
The new Tahoe 2025 with destination. So all these numbers are going to be with destination charges because it's not negotiable, right?
That's correct.
Destination charges are always there. The Tahoe two-wheel drive starts at $63,495. That's a big number, $63,000. Now, four-wheel drive costs $3,000. So as soon as you buy a four-wheel drive Tahoe Suburban, you already are adding $3,000 to it. Then the Suburban still has a $3,000 premium over Tahoe. So now, if you had a base Tahoe and you added four-wheel drive and you added this long wheel base for the Suburban, you're already at $69,000. So you're already pushing $70,000 with this particular truck. So Ford Expedition starts at $63,695, so $200 more than the new Tahoe. So I mean, they're competitive as far as Tahoe versus Expedition, but on price, they're pretty close, but both prices came up a lot. So
yeah, they did. That's really painful. You know, am I right in saying that Jeep brought down their prices, at least since their inception of the Wagoneer and Grand Wagoneer, have actually gone down a hair since then, and they're a little bit more competitive price-wise? Because initially they were priced out of the ballpark. I think that changed a little bit. Also, they're doing fleet sales like crazy right now. Almost every rental fleet seems to have the regular Wagoneer. Or at least I've seen a whole bunch of them with, you know, rental plates on them. But, I mean, so what we're talking about is if you want to get to a large, proper SUV family hauler at this point, basically something with a frame, okay, you're in it minimum $60,000, realistically.
Well, am I correct? We're not talking about, you know, incentives. Yeah.
Without the incentives and incentives, the problem with that is that they're not permanent.
Right.
So you don't know for sure 1 month to the next, really, if that incentive is going to kick in. You don't. There's a variety of different things. I'm talking about just the price that's on the page or on the sticker that's on the window.
Yeah, you're really close to 64. You know, we mentioned 63 and change. But
yeah.
Let's be real. Let's say that sticker price stays. So now you're close to 64, just at the bottom layer level. And I just checked, a Jeep Wagoneer is also 64. So
it's competitive now, at least with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, my friend, that's very painful. I mean, it wasn't that a couple of years ago when we were freaking out that they were $50,000, you know, for which was basically your base price. And we were screaming around and, you know, lighting things on fire and being upset about that. And I know it's the price of living and inflation and everything else, but still, it really does feel like the consumer who wants something that has that type of capacity, the ability to tow, to be a real truck, and at the same time haul their family around. Let's face it, a majority of these things are family haulers. They're getting hit pretty hard in the wallet.
Yeah. So, I mean, the only other choice I would say, if you're looking at this, you could check out some of the minivans.
Right.
But it's a whole different game. You know, minivans have a stigma. They are very good at hauling people, very good at hauling people, but really lucky at towing. They don't tow.
I think that the best you can get is around 35, maybe 4,000 pounds best.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that's just not enough.
But lower prices too. I mean,
much lower prices.
Yeah. A lot of minivans, what, like 40-ish, maybe 45-ish? So
you can start in the high 30s.
Yeah.
And now, pardon me, and now there's a variety of hybrid powertrains out there, all-wheel drive, front-wheel drive. They are becoming more and more revolved. Now, this is not a minivan podcast that we're doing here, but to be fair, they're remarkably utilitarian. They're easy to drive and live with. Most of them you can fit into a garage. They make a lot of sense, but if you need to tow, and that's one of the main parts, and then if you need to go through really nasty weather conditions, that's the other part I would say, then you just can't replace a solid SUV, solid meaning, you know, with a proper frame, good ground clearance, real beef underneath it. And that's what I think a lot of people want, either image-wise or they actually truly need that. Mm-hmm. And so the minivan, as good as it is, and they're getting so much better now, still can't compete in that realm. But there's a lot of people out there who really don't need, truly don't need to have a Suburban. And indeed, they could get something else. It just makes more sense. But telling somebody who has their heart set on a truck not to buy a truck, damn near impossible.
It's not going to work. And also, the other trend is big wheels, right? So we didn't touch on this yet, but you spoke about status, right? And I think a lot of the big SUV purchases are based on, you know, I'm successful, you know, I have some money, I want to show off. And now 24-inch wheels are coming to the Tahoe, Suburban, also Expedition and Navigator. And of course, Yukons, right? Yukons. And I believe the new Escalade will also have a 24. 24-inch wheels.
That's a wagon wheel. That is covered wagon stuff we're talking about. Old West wagon wheel minus the wood, adding metal. That's huge.
But also, we're talking about concept vehicles from a few years back. You know, when you show the concept vehicle, let's say 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, it may have a 24-inch wheel. And it looks great on that, you know, turntable at an auto show and with lights shining on top of it. But now we're talking about production-ready SUVs going out the door with those wheels. And my driving review is coming. So just in a few days, if you go back to oldtfl.com, we have a full driving review. We drive several Suburbans and Tahoes with 24s. We drive the Z71. We drive the RST. The RST Performance Edition, the police package, is coming back on the Tahoe.
That's cool.
That's performance exhaust system, performance intake system. Lots of power, 433 horsepower in that particular one. So you'll find out about driving soon. But yeah, so you said status, right? I think that's a lot of it. That's a big part of it because, you know, these are flashy. You can, you know, get an interesting color. You can get a big, huge wheel from the manufacturer. Not, you know, you're not going to your local, you know, mom and pop, you know, wheel store to get these wheels.
Right. I think actually when you just brought that up, that's the main point too. Not just the turntable with the concepts, but also look at what SEMA's done over the past, especially the past 20 years with wheel sizes and designs and making them accessible for everybody. I mean, I've got people right out my window who've got a older Tahoe, which is all beat up, but man, those wheels are sweet and they are huge. Yeah. So this is the thing that people are moving towards. Never mind the fact that they're actually, it's harder to make those things efficient or comfortable because of the massive wheels, but that's a whole different podcast right there. But hey, you know, if people are buying them, more power to them, you know, go get your 24 inch wheel, 24 inch.
Yes.
That's just insane. You know, Andre, seriously, covered wagon days are coming back.
I love it. Yes. Well, yeah. Anyway, so that's, I guess we can finish on a slightly higher note, right? Yes, these are expensive machines, but even the base one had 360-degree cameras, right? Lots of visibility. I think the visibility is pretty good. You know, lots of features, huge screen. So if you're into tech, you're going to love it. If you're not into tech, you may not love it. But by the way, Tahoe and Suburban, they still have knobs for like light controls, wiper controls, climate.
Four-wheel drive system.
So all those are manual knobs, you know, and buttons. So
and they've gone to the GM preferred stock. Granted, it's electrically activated as opposed to being an actual mechanical component for gear selector, but it's still there on the stock, which I do like. Some people think it may look a little too widdly or perhaps look weak, but I've actually played with those before and they're fine. In fact, I just drove a Mercedes-Benz that has basically the same thing. And I think that's a really good compromise. It's so much better than the buttons. I hate the buttons on the dash, push button, you know, transmissions. This is a much better option. And I hope that they do this throughout the entire GM lineup.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm with you on that. And also you have several other videos. You go into a couple of events soon, right? You have a couple of videos coming out soon as well, right?
Yeah, hopefully. We'll see what happens. But I'm also going to a Toyota event where I will be speaking of minivans. I'll see the new Sienna, the GR Corolla. Yeah. That has a new automatic transmission version of it. I'll be able to hang out with that. I'm going to be seeing the Honda Passport in Moab, Utah. Yes. And then on top of all that, there's a bunch of other videos that hopefully will be coming out this month, including a G-Wagon. There's a Nissan Ariya. And and I'm hoping that this one actually makes it through and you guys will be able to see it. I got a chance, Andre, to go to the Hot Wheels production facility here right down the street from where I live. It's in El Segundo, and watch the whole process of how they go from someone's full-size car and condense it down to something that just costs a couple bucks and is about that big. And I got to see the whole thing behind the scenes. And so,
that's awesome.
They allowed cameras in certain sections. So hopefully that video will come out soon as well. So yeah, a couple things going on.
That's awesome. Can I do that to my Buhanka? Can I shrink my Buhanka van into a little...
There's a contest that they have every year where you go on to their actually to their facility with your cars. It's a big car show. And if you win the contest, then they actually will park you in front of a giant billboard, which looks like a Hot Wheels box. And they will, and I think there's some financial remuneration that comes along with it, and they will design your car, shrink it down, and turn it into a production Hot Wheel. So in theory, yes, you could, but you'd have to get your Buhanka here, and you'd have to put it into the contest, and I won't be able to help you because I might be a judge next year if everything goes well. And as such, I'd have to be like, I don't know him. You know, even if you tried to tempt me with deep fried Snicker bars.
Okay, I'll try my best, Nathan. Anyway, Bujanka story, it's a different story.
Yes.
We have to kind of wrap up this show. I cannot wait to see some of your videos. And I'm also jealous that you're going to be in Moab, of course. I mean, you couldn't make it to the state fair, but Moab, I think, may be cooler. Maybe cooler than that.
It always is, and I miss it. I haven't been out to Moab 4 months, 5 months now. Wow, it's been a while. So I'm looking forward to going back out there. And yeah, those videos should all be hitting probably by early November, if not the end of October.
All right, dude, great to see you. Great to talk to you.
Good to see you too, man.
We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening and watching us, you guys, on altfl.com. Check us out. We'll see you next time.
Adios, amigos.